Couple of quick plugs before we start today's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is @NarbosPodcast. If you want to email us, our email address is narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments on future episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. And if you want to be on a future episode, let us know as well, and we'll try to set something up. You can also follow our show on all of the podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So please give us a follow and subscribe on any of those sites, and you will be able to get us pushed to you every single week. The theme music for this show is brought to you by a band called Ew, You're a Girl and Girls Suck. They are a punk band from here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And their Bandcamp page is iagags.bandcamp.com. That's iagags.bandcamp.com. They used to watch Degrassi episodes when they took breaks from recording back in the 90s. Anyways, that's about it for the plugs. Let's get to this week's episode.
From Monte Carlo. Hello, hello. Yes, I was there. I didn't update you all last episode, but as Arlo said a few episodes ago, she didn't know where I was, but she thought I was in, quote, Monte Carlo. But no, I wasn't. I was elsewhere. I was somewhere else in the world. I was in St. Lucia.
Did I say Monte Carlo?
You did. You did. Said Monte Carlo, which is on the border of, I looked it up between, it's actually in France, but it's on the border of France and Italy. So I went south and not that way. So yes, so right. I am here.
Noted.
Back again. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Narbos and Broomheads show. I hope everyone's doing well. Let's see. What are we doing? Who are all these other peoples? I'm gonna send it out to the geographical mastermind living in Regine, Saskatch. Who could that be over there?
That would be me, Arlo, coming to you from Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, which I can locate on a map.
Yay!
I'm not going to lie. Geography is not my strong suit. And apparently, listening to you tell me where you're going is also not a strong suit.
I'm just like, I just go, Ted, I don't know. He's gone.
He just didn't show up.
Yeah. Where is he? I don't know. Not at home.
No.
Well, I can also find Toronto on a map most of the time. So who's over in Toronto with us today?
Are you going to be able to find Germany and Czechia and Poland on a map? Because that's where I'm going to be in like a month. So.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah. Very cool.
But go ahead, Arlo. Make up places that I'm going to be. It's all, all good.
There's no... I'll probably remember Poland. The rest, I've already forgotten.
Good job. Good job. Hi, everybody. Alan in Toronto. And, of course, being in Toronto, I don't need to know no geography. We are at the center of everything. So...
Capital of Canada.
That's right. And just a little bit, south and a little bit west of the center, we've got Oakville. So what's going on almost in the center?
Yeah, I mean, instead of calling it the GTA, it should be the GTC, the Greater Toronto Center here in Oakville. Along our geography discussion, I taught geography when I first started teaching. And I always told my classes that I was the best teacher to teach grade 9 geography because that was the last geography I ever took.
Well done.
Perfectly suited to teach grade 9 geography because that's all I knew.
You ever pull down the map and it was like a naked lady that one of the kids put up there?
Yeah. What a prank.
Mm-hmm. You're like, what?
Get that back up there.
Don't tell your parents.
Although I did have a teaching friend who said one time he wore his, do you guys remember like tearaway pants that had the buttons down the side?
That's just, I don't like how this story is going to end.
So He said he went into class one time and went to do a big demonstrative rip off of his pants and say, let's get going and get working out. I think it was a fitness class. And he ripped them off and realized he had forgot to put his shorts on, and all he had on was his gitch underneath.
And now he is unemployed and lives in your basement because...
No, that is the same guy who's now in Florida that I was talking about earlier.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Well, you can get away with that shit there, so it's fine.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
All right. And I'm Tim, so I'm excited to talk about Chuck making a choice here.
Mm, what a choice.
Finally meet the dad.
What a dad.
What a guy. We'll get to it.
Yeah, I was feeling for him at first. You know, I know it's hard for people who've been incarcerated, but there was a point in this show, spoiler alert, going, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
where you're questioning who's the adult in the
yeah,
room.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, you know what? Maybe, like,
yeah.
You're like, this guy seems to be rehabilitated, has no problems, head on straight. Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
Oops.
So that's where Chuck gets his anger from.
We'll see. Yeah, it's great.
So, what do you think? Shall we jump in?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, this one's called The Chuck Makes a Choice. And the air date was September 1, 1983. Getting ready for some kindergarten action.
Nice. Me too.
I think it was like year to... Was he still year to year?
I think the last ones aired over Christmas. So, the last one would have been like January 1st or 2nd or something like that earlier in the year. So, then they took... 9 months, and here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the kids are getting older. I won't say who it is. And again, not heavy on the spoilers, but one student's, young student's voice changes to a completely different voice. So it doesn't get lower. It just becomes another human being. But anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself. So it was written by Sue Acourt. Acourt. What is that? What Arlo, do you know anything about this woman?
Well, I do. We've seen her before. She's written before, and she also played Nurse Trish in
Cookie
Goes to Hospital. So
the nice
we
one?
Even have a visual of what the writer looks like.
Yeah,
was a nice one, right?
I know. I think she was Nurse Shitbag, wasn't she?
Oh,
no,
not
no,
the
no,
one...
no. She was the nice one.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right.
The one that continued.
Oh, good.
You and his friends, and then clearly did not. Uh-huh.
Not the
but
one
she
was
very kind and showed Cookie on the doll what was going to happen with the operation and all that stuff. Yeah, that would be Sue Duckwort.
All right. So we open the episode. So a bunch of kids are on the stage, so it's going to be a play-based. And Arlo's like, yes, my brethren, my friends.
My childhood.
Thine stage. Act, children. Act. So the bunch of kids rehearsing a play. It's Robin Hood. And guess what? Pete is Robin Hood. Ida's given stage direction from out front on the floor, and she directs them to exit stage right. And we have our first little bit of hijinks. And they're like, and they start banging into each other because they're not sure. So, Arlo, if you were to say, if you were the director in the crowd standing on the floor and you said exit stage right, is it like, would you go point with your left hand or your right hand? Like, which way are they actually going?
I mean, no, I actually don't remember.
Because, like, when you're standing on stage and it's like exit stage right, is it left to your left that you're standing on the stage, or is it from the audience? I don't know. I've confused myself. My brain is overheating.
I mean, ouch. If only we had a tool that could tell us. As if the performer looks out to the audience, the area on their right-hand side is called stage right. So leave to your right.
Like, yes.
Ida says the opposite, which confused me. I was like, that's not how I remember it. And then I was like, well, maybe I'm not remembering correctly. So I think Ida's just being bossy and stupid.
Yeah.
She's the president, and the president makes the rules, Arlo.
Yes, as Ida is wont to do, right?
Yeah, and also if you weren't sure that Ida was the director, you can tell because she is wearing a beret. So
yes.
Yeah, the official uniform of the director. So there you go.
When I was in elementary school in grade 3, we did a play of the Nutcracker Suite. And Yours truly was the Nutcracker Prince. Thank you very much.
Wow.
And we were shit. It was awful. And I was no good either.
When I was in fifth grade, we did the Jungle Book.
Mm. Oh.
I was the lead vulture.
Good job.
Excellent. In church for the... for the whatchamacallit, you know, the bullshit at Christmas play. yeah, that whole thing.
The bullshit.
I played the donkey. So they actually found a dog costume, and I wore it, and I was the donkey. And I also wore the dog costume to tease our dog. So it's fine. Yeah.
There was a point in the play when my brother was the mouse king. And we have to have a sword fight, the two of us. And I don't know if he did it on purpose or accidentally, but he whipped and like just ripped his sword through mine, and my sword went flying.
Yes.
And we just froze because that wasn't supposed to happen. And I just, like, we didn't know what to do. Dumb grade threes.
Working stiff.
Yeah. Well, Alan, I don't know if this is the same in your school because we both went to French school, right? But for us, like, there was always like this sort of disjointedness in terms of what to do for the play because it needed to have French elements, but none of the parents spoke French.
Yeah.
So they'd end up every year they do these musicals like The Jungle Book, for example. And so all of the dialogue would be in English, but the teachers would translate the songs into French.
Ugh. If I recall correctly, I was never in the plays at my school, but I believe our plays were all in English. But I cannot confirm that. I do know that when we did the fashion show, it was all in English. Can you imagine for a parent, like, you're already having to go to the fucking play?
sit in those uncomfortable chairs.
And now it's like, and my school didn't have an auditorium, so it was literally the plastic chairs, like, in rows in the gym. Oof.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, very bad.
Oh, yeah. My daughter's school is almost about a month away of putting on the Lion King. It's called Lion King Junior, I guess. It's a little bit simpler. And it will be that. We will be on plastic chairs and probably about as good as Robin Hood was in this episode, I imagine.
I went to see my stepkid do a play, and their school has like a full-fledged theater. And I was like, am I rich now?
Nice. They won't build new schools in the public schools that way, or very rare. Like our high school, when it was new, which was only about 10 years ago, they won't put an auditorium in because they consider it a waste of space.
Yeah. The arts. Come on now.
Alan looks around. He looks around and looks at his hands and goes, am I rich now? And they're like, shh, be quiet, sir. and you say like in regular voice, you're like, am I rich? Can you tell me? Shh, quiet. And people on stage are like, they're like, what's going on?
You do not speak to the prince that way.
Yeah.
So the music teacher assures Ida. Ida's a bit like, ugh. And the music teacher assures her that it'll be good for opening night.
The music Nolan teacher, Chuck. Played by Wendy Watson.
Yes.
Oh.
The composer or partial composer for the music for the early Degrassi franchises. Also, she's plays Mrs. Gonzalez is the name of the teacher.
Hmm. Sure good at playing that piano.
I don't know. When we come back to it later, is she really that good? Because it sounds like she hits some sour notes.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And she's like, wait, I'm playing the piano and I wrote the music. Do I get two paychecks? And Linda Shatler was like, no, you get zero paychecks. No one on the show makes any money.
We'll double your paycheck. We're not getting anything. Yeah. Play that piano or I'll slam the cover down on your hands. Lynn Schuyler is like a real taskmaster. So Noel and Chuck come out on stage with prop walls, and Ida wants to know where the trees are. And the boys are like, and you know that she's been giving them the gears, like the whole thing. And that's the thread through this whole episode. So the boys are tired of painting. Chuck tries to get Pete on the go to leave to go visit their dad. And Pete says he needs to stay and practice because he's Robin Hood. Again, we see right off the jump with that big dick energy again. He's doing it. He's like, I'm Robin Hood. And it's no like, it's just like, yeah, dude. Yeah, dog. Yeah. So he takes a rain check on the visit and asks Chuck to tell the old man that he'll see him next week. We see a new girl, Tina. I think Tina's a relatively new girl. We haven't seen Tina before, right?
I don't think so.
Correct.
No, and I'm not sure we see her again.
She's new to the school entirely.
Oh, do they do the Zach Morris job on her? Is she only one episode, like to be the love interest and then disappears?
I think
that is exactly what they do to her.
Awesome.
Ooh.
Yeah. You will not see her past this episode.
Maybe she had to move back home because schooling was too difficult in Toronto.
Yep. Yeah.
And so new girl Tina asks Pete where Chuck is headed, which he says, go to meet their dad. And we got the opening credits, and we have a little play with the graphics, and it's a swipe of, like, curtains. Like, it says, what's the name of this episode again? Chuck Takes a Chance, and it opens from the middle out. So we have a little flourish with what they're dealing with, some high-tech computer graphics. So we're at the bowling alley, and Chuck meets his dad, who hands him some bowling shoes, and I have to note, there's a sweet arcade game of Defender.
Oh, yeah.
Which I had on Atari and still have. It's home. It's in my old room. And I'm just like, there's no Atari anymore. It's just like, what am I going to do with that?
And nothing. I would like to point out that Chuck's dad's, the actor who plays him, his first name in real life is Guido.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
The best. Incredible name.
Guido Condras. Yes.
Amazing.
That's his name.
I'd like to point out this is 5-pin bowling and not 10-pin bowling.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And this took me right back to Stratford, and I could smell the cigarette smoke as that scene came.
I think also there's like, we were talking how, in their family here, Chuck looks nothing like his mom and Pete. And Pete and Chuck look nothing alike.
Nope.
But Chuck does look like his dad, yep. Right?
Uh-huh.
So, genes or conspiracy theories. Something.
Like cab rides.
Yep.
Who gets in those cabs?
Oh, shit, I have no money to pay for the cab. How shall I ever pay?
Yeah. What happens in a Beck taxi stays in a Beck taxi.
Uh-huh.
But not really, because you're going to knock me up. And then what happens in a Beck taxi stays in my house till he's 18. So, fuck me, I guess.
That's what he did.
Unless I go to jail.
So, the dad asks where Pete is, and Chuck tells him that he had to stay. So, he does like a little swerve here. He says, he had to stay and work on his English project. And dad then asks him, hey, didn't he get a part in the school play? And then Chuck just straight up goes, yeah, he got the role of Robin Hood. So it's weird. He's like, if you can believe it. And so he just said something different that wasn't true. But even though he wasn't trying to hide the truth, I don't know.
Maybe we're just laying the groundwork that Chuck's a little lying bitch.
Yeah. Yep. So dad gives him a no kidding and tells him about it's heredity moment. This guy's kind of like a proto Mike Nelson, really.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
He's like the first edition.
Right down to the mustache.
Oh, yeah. And tells him about his time in a high school play, the dad does, and says he was a World War I fighter ace that bit the dust in the first act.
What kind of school play is this?
Yeah.
I was a World War I flying ace, so that's the plot of the play, and he gets shot and killed. That's like, what a great school play.
It was like, what, the 60s, maybe, early 70s?
Yeah, like, that's amazing for a school play.
Yes. And so Chuck asks him if he's ever been on a plane, and then he says no, and that he got caught up in driving a cab, and you know how it is, end quote. And I'm like, no, your child doesn't. He's a kid. He doesn't understand like the grinding gears of capitalism, how you get into underemployment and not making enough that you can't fly. It's like, just like you know. Chuck is like, well, okay, dude.
I mean, I guess. As we discussed in a previous episode, Chuck is quite worldly.
He is. Yeah, that's true. He probably does get it, actually.
He's like a curmudgeon in a 9-year-old's body.
I mean, yeah. Chuck's like, there are people who don't pay me for newspapers, and I have to pay out of my own pocket, exactly, Dad.
He's like, I get the grind, brother.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
They both fucking cheers their beers and take a swig. Yeah. They're like, yep.
Yeah.
As he's lighting a cigarette.
Hey, kid, you shouldn't be drinking beers. Get off my back. It's light beer.
It's been a hard week.
Okay. Players light. Busting off darts in the bowling alley. So Dad and Chuck are walking down the sidewalk, so they left the bowling alley. And they talk about getting more passes to get out to see some hockey games. Time's up for Dad, and we find out he's in a halfway house, and he needs to get back. He gives Chuck a little knock across the chin and bids him adieu.
Well, before he leaves, he says, maybe by then I'll have a job by the next time, or we'll go see some hockey games. I'll be able to have a job. And my mind was like, don't you think driving a taxi might be the type of job that an ex-con might do?
Well, they own their own fucking cab too, right? Like,
or something. You know what I mean? Like, I figured that would be the type of employment he could just jump back into.
I would think so too. It's a little bizarre. He's like CEO of the Royal Bank or bust after I'm out of jail.
Maybe I'll try out.
I like the sound of Professor Guido.
It's weird that Chuck is like walking his dad home.
Yeah.
Why would you drop your kid off and then go back to the halfway house? But whatever, it's fine.
He's probably only allowed to go so far of a radius.
Chuck's house is right beside a school, so his dad's not.
He's like, wow. I can't go near the school. You know, he's like, you know, Chuck's like, I know. You'll pervert. So we're out in front of the library. First I thought it was Ida, but that's actually Tina, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is Tina.
So yeah. She, which makes a lot more sense. So runs into Chuck and they have a nice little walk home together, and then they part ways in front of the Degrassi grocery.
He immediately takes her books. Yeah.
And can barely fit them under his arm.
Like, by the time I was, you know, any type of age for romance, like, that was definitely a passé thing. Like, carrying someone's books home for them. Mm-hmm. So, well, I don't know. I don't know if that still existed then, or if it was just because the writers existed.
We've been through this with these writers where, you know, like, they what is it, like, you want to be my steady? Like, things like that, where it's like, that's not language we use in the 80s anymore.
Yeah, they're projecting from when they were younger.
Yeah.
With Chuck's wisdom, I think he saw the Depression and the Dust Bowl, by the way he acts in his wise ways.
And we all,
so we're at Chuck's.
We all wanted a new deal from Roosevelt, and we got it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Hoover Dam, you should have built it. The greatest invention, the greatest construction event ever.
Like, in the greatest country of all time.
Yeah.
So at Chuck and Pete's house, Mom is plunging the sink, which I had a throwback to when I was in university and had this little shitty basement apartment, and this, like, the pipes were really old and big trees, like roots, would get into the pipes and block them all up. And I remember taking the dirty old bathroom plunger out into the kitchen sink and it looking like that. And just in the apartment, there was no open windows. You couldn't open the windows. It was kind of underground, and plunging it and just going, this brings me back. I can smell the Drano that didn't drain. It's just sitting, burning up hair and old pieces of onion and tomato. Gross. So Pete is pacing. He's doing heavy breathing. He's preparing for the play, or alternatively, he's seeing if he can have a panic attack or pass out first. I don't know which one's going to happen. So chill out, my man.
And Chuck, you know, this is a really big reason why I don't have children.
This?
She's like plunging the sink, like it's probably really gross, and she's got fucking Pete wandering around doing just like kid stuff. Like I could just in my head, I could just be like, shut the fuck up.
Like, shut the fuck up. I'll burn this house down.
Arlo's watching him. This is not realistic.
Well, we see a little bit later she might actually do that to her kids when she's asked just to simply
mend a pair of pants. Yeah.
Mend a pair of pants for her son.
Yeah.
Yes. So Chuck wants to know what Pete's doing when he comes in, and Ida told Pete that it would help him concentrate into being Robin Hood. Okay, sure.
I mean, this is all but Pete's fault. Why would they cast this kid as Robin Hood? Pete, that's the last fucking kid choice in the school who I would cast as Robin Hood. You've got to be kidding me.
Gave him a sweet deal on something.
I unbelievable.
I mean, when kids are this age, it's like based on like whether you can memorize things or not. You know?
Yeah.
Probably the only one who wanted to do it.
Pete asked his mom if Pete asked mom if Robin Hood was a good guy or bad guy, and I'm like, uh-oh, I know where this is going.
Uh-huh.
These are big questions.
Big questions from Pete, of course. So Pete asked if his dad was like Robin Hood because he broke the law, but he did it for a good reason, and he's still basically a good guy. The mom says he's only trying to get the money back those guys owed him, so mom's not really helping, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But, all right, everybody, so why is he in jail, do we think now?
Well, I like how Pete's like, yeah, my dad must be a good guy even if he's in jail. And his mom's like, yes, he's a good guy. Like,
that's one way to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, and trying to get back the money those guys owed him. And again, it's like if he was out, he could work for Chuck doing collections for the paper because apparently he's effective. Right. Yeah.
I think he probably beat up somebody trying to get back money from a poker game. That would be my guess. He's in for some sort of assault.
Pete overheard. He's like, I heard that he said that this guy bite the curb. I'm only guessing curb means some type of French croissant or something.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, he probably messed up these dudes. Focus in on the sink, which the drain finally clears. And I am so relieved watching the show. I'm like, thank God. Oh, we got that done. So back to practicing on the stage. Kids are arguing with Ida how the script is written. They want to change, but Ida says that's not going to happen. Then she turns her ire to the costumes crew who are seated on the side of the stage. And it's like, hey, you guys, you call that working? It's like, oh, Ida, you're a lot.
You battle axe.
Chuck and Tina agree to work on the trees together. And if this was an audience, if there was like a canned audience, it'd be like, ooh.
Uh-huh. Also, like, we know that in this case, unlike the rest of Degrassi that we're going to see, there is an actual teacher that's involved in the play, but she's still like, I don't know, everybody. Ida's in charge. Like, what am I going to do? She's got the beret.
I got nothing.
Yeah. So.
The teacher mimes a beret and she's like putting it on. It's like, and then shrugs her shoulders.
Uh-huh.
So Tina takes off, and Chuck asked Noel not to tell Tina about his dad having spent time in the Grey Bar Hotel. Noel figures everyone in the school knows already, so she'll find out sooner or later. And Chuck is like, later would be just fine. So you go, yeah, I know, dude.
Also, Noel going through puberty before our eyes.
Oh yeah,
he's like, what do you mean, Chuck? Your dad's in jail,
my friend.
Yeah. Also, like, so Tina is kind of falls out of the sky for this episode, and as we've discussed, is going to disappear afterwards. But they don't establish like she's new. She just got to the school. Like everybody seems to know her. And yet, is she also the most unpopular kid in the school? It's like, everybody knows that your dad's in jail, except Tina, because we don't talk to her, because she's a bitch. Like,
I think it's kind of insinuated that she's a new student.
Okay. And she'll be at the school for 3 days, and then...
Well, her dad doesn't want her associating with those ragamuffins.
Oh, yes.
He finds out.
Oh,
that's true.
Yeah, we'll meet that guy shortly. So out in front of Chuck's house, mom is working on the cab again. Chuck wants her to fix the tear in his pants. And, oh, she's no nonsense slash all sass. She says, oh, my hearing must be going. For a minute there, I thought I heard you ask me to fix a tear in your pants. Because, again, it's like, yeah, I'm a kid.
And here you thought her next answer would be, okay, I'll get to it. But what does she say? No.
She barely has enough time to cook dinner. She says if he wants them done tonight, he's on his own. It's like, yeah, okay, good. And Chuck goes in the house completely defeated.
What is going on? She says, maybe I'll get to it next week. Next week?
Yeah.
You know, like, it would take so little time to sew that rib. Do you guys know how to sew?
I know how to sew enough.
No, not anymore.
I know enough to fix a rip, but it would not look good. Like,
great.
Fair. I could probably
be like, that rip is gone, but you clearly sewed that poorly, is what happened.
It might have looked better ripped if I would have just left.
Yeah.
So are you more likely to mend your clothes, or would you just, like,
burn them?
Stop wearing it.
I'd probably ask my wife to do it, to be honest. She can fix that kind of stuff.
Gender roles.
Two words. Two words. Value village.
We had family studies when I was in elementary school. We learned to sew.
Yeah.
I just don't remember.
At Tina's house. So we're in Tina's house, and Chuck's coming over. He comes in. They're going to work on the trees. She's at the kitchen table. They chat about the right type of green to use. Enter, Reverend Britishman. With a basket of clothes, basket of laundry.
Okay, says, so
dad.
Who is this dude? Yeah, please tell us.
He is played by Kit Hood. Mm-hmm. Degrassi royalty.
Yeah, yeah.
But is also credited to James Chandler for some reason.
Working name, I guess. Don't want to give it away.
I guess he didn't want to be credited as himself for whatever reason. And IMDb credits a different James Chandler with
a different picture.
Yeah, with this role. So why Kit Hood chose James Chandler to be credited as, I don't know. I don't know if he knew of the actual actor James Chandler, or it was an inside joke or what have you. But if you look on IMDb, it is not credited to the correct actor.
And I'm pretty sure this is being filmed in Linda Shather's house, which is also the same house they use for Caitlin. When her and Rick go over there, when they trying to get the petition for the factory to stop spewing smoke, and they write the sweet rap.
Oh, right.
I thought it looked like Lucy's house.
But they might have used it for Lucy's too, right?
I don't know. I wasn't sure, but like that sort of like bar seating situation that they have there, the little cut out from the kitchen kind of thing, it looked like Lucy's house to me. So I was curious if maybe we've seen that again.
Well, if in real life if it was Linda Shiler's house in real life, then she's really proud of it, because this scene is all about how that's the fanciest kitchen in all of Toronto. Because like clearly it's supposed to juxtapose Chuck's home. So Chuck comes in and is like, whoa, like he doesn't say it, right? But you can see in his face, he's like, oh my God, this bitch is loaded.
Yeah.
They never
Made me think of Lucy's house is because, you know, her house was supposed to be really nice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious, but yeah, no confirmation on that.
So he says, Kit Hood, or whoever this mystery man is, this mystery reverend, I guess, like, I was like, oh, it's a priest, but it's like, he got kids, so it's probably not a priest.
They also like a reverend in the Degrassi universe, huh?
He's what?
They like reverends. They like a pastor, you know? Yeah. Shane's dad was a pastor. This guy's a pastor. It's very very Degrassi.
And he's got some sauce, because he says, oh, there must be a gremlin around here. Did he eat socks? Berries and cream. So, yeah, he's all about that. He didn't say that last part.
I mean, I do think that the fact that he's a reverend, I think that was probably a conscious choice, because, you know, it makes him potentially extra judgy. Chuck's, you know, convict father.
Also, like, I would never, like, you know, punch my dad, but if he was my dad, I would punch him. Like, if he talked like that all the time. Like, just like a little smarmy fucking jerk.
What I wonder what heavy metal was out in the '80s, like 83.
Quiet Riot.
Shout of the Devil came out in 84. No, maybe 83. So they could very well have a vinyl of Shout of the Devil by Motley Crue in the house.
Yes.
I doubt they would.
Doo-noo-noo.
Devil's music.
Yeah, he's convinced that KISS stands for Knights in Satan's Service.
Oh, it does. So Tina's she's a bit embarrassed. And he, of course, notices a tear in her shirt. He says, oh, I must get a fix at once that she need to go around looking like a ragamuffin. So
he's like a fucking like medieval times dad.
It's
like a court jester.
And I love the shot as he's talking about it. You know, it goes down under the table and Chuck so embarrassed about that hole in his pants. That
great
bomb.
Shot.
Yeah.
And pulls the tear together with his hand. So good. I was like, good job. Good on you. Dad leaves to go do the laundry, and Tina says he's always fussing about something. And the wise sage Chuck says he means well. And I'm like, what kid says that? I was like, good on him. Hey Chuck, you're a better man than me. But who says that?
Yeah, you'd be like, I'd be like, he's a fucking dickhead.
Who's this fucking guy?
Yeah, fuck your dad.
Is he pray to God with that mouth?
Get out of here, you English dandy. So be on your way. She asks what his parents are like, and Chuck says, Mom's okay. Dad is away right now. She presses him a little bit, and he's like, he's a pilot. Yeah, that's right, a pilot. Well, he doesn't say
lying little fuck.
That's the ticket.
Yep. That's the ticket. Yeah. He puts his finger up in the air. Yeah. So yeah, he has made a choice. I guess this is the choice of one of a few, one of several, uh-huh. I guess. Back on stage, Odd is giving it out to the crew. Meanwhile, Pete is holding court with a bunch of kids in the front of the stage. And we come in on the tail end of a story that he's telling, which concludes with, so my dad fought the guy and got it back. And all the kids are enamored. They love this story.
He's like, but the guy lived, so it was only aggravated assault.
He didn't plan it. It was only second degree murder.
Yeah.
Martin loves this especially and thinks, your dad's a lot like Robin Hood. But Pete says, the only difference is that Robin Hood didn't have to spend any time in the can. It's like, yeah, okay.
I love the
passes to get out.
Martin only gets like the one or like a couple of lines, and that's one of the best ones because Martin, stupid. He's
like, totally stupid.
Oh, you mean he's like Robin Hood? And he says it with like, again, like no cadence, no life, just the words passing through his lips. That's it.
Loves it. Caitlin asked Pete to regale them with the tale, another tale of the time a couple of dudes owed his dad a bunch of money, but we're gonna have it shut down. Chuck comes over and says no way, and says Ida needs everyone on the stage. He takes Pete to a sidebar and says tell them that it's bad enough that their old man is in the hooskow, but he doesn't need to advertise. Pete thinks it's no big deal, as everyone knows about it, and Chuck looks across the stage at the lovely Tina and mutters to himself, not everyone. Chuck has a lot of Eeyore moments in this episode. Uh-huh. So we're at Pete and Chuck's house, and Pete's cutting out tickets for the play, and Chuck is watching hockey on TV.
And can I just point out,
of course,
sweet. He's just sitting there in his little sock feet, and it just like struck me because it's so, with American television, it's so infrequent that you would see, I mean, you would never see anyone in socks. They all wear shoes in the house, and it's just just so Canadian. Like, he's just sitting there in his little sock feet, and I love that that was filmed and on camera, and it's just like a little slice of Canadian life there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I know, it's right up there with closing the doors to the house.
I think you said this before, Arlo, but what was Drew's reaction when he came to Canada and realized that we don't put on a different pair of shoes when we come into the house?
He hates it.
So does he still do it?
It drives me nuts.
So that's a yes.
Like, he's conscious of it. Like, when he goes to someone else's house, like, okay, he'll take off his shoes, but he hates it, right? Sure. And, like, he does take off his shoes in our house when he's, like, relaxing and stuff. But for the most part, he does not appreciate it.
Question. In America, do dogs not do poops outside on the sidewalk?
You're like, question. Was Drew raised in a barn?
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't get it. I don't know why it's such a big deal. It's so weird. Ugh.
American television, like, even when people are relaxing at home, sometimes even when they're sitting on their bed with their feet on their bed, they have their little shoes on. Ugh. Like, I it was such a tiny moment in this episode, but I just really appreciated the
yes,
the realism of having him sit there in his little sock feet.
Yes, absolutely. So Pete asked him to give the ticket to their dad tomorrow. And so Pete, again, with the energy, holds up a ticket in front of Chuck's face and says, it's a ticket for the play. This is a play that Chuck has been involved in and has been there. So according to Pete, he has been on the floor. According, like, he thinks his brother, Chuck, thinks he's just been on the floor cutting up just random pieces of paper. I don't know. So he has to tell stupid Chuck. I don't get it. Chuck tells him to give it to himself, but he can't because he needs to practice. So he used that excuse again, which I guess is true. Chuck finally concedes, and he'll deliver the ticket. Bum-ba-ba-bum. We're at Queen City Bowl. And Chuck is waiting for his dad. I wonder, where would anybody know where this is or where this would be?
Arlo?
I was thinking Queen City, but that's kind of on the nose.
I mean, I don't know where it is, but it is called the same thing. It's called Queen City Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So if it still exists under the same name, I'm not sure.
I'm looking it up. I mean, it's on the Degrassi fandom page.
I highly doubt a 5-pin bowling alley would still be around, but...
Oh, there's one in Winnipeg. Don't you?
Yeah, we have mainly 5-pin bowling here.
Yeah, you know, like, I've never been to Winnipeg except for stopping in on a plane, like touching down and going back up. But it sounds like it's a magical place.
Yeah.
Like, you guys have hoops on the side of the highway to like play garbage basketball with. You've still got 5-pin bowling.
It's amazing.
Like, it sounds like it's just, you know, it's like Willy Wonka's land of in Canada.
The latest thing to happen in Winnipeg, you know, Canadians, you know, Winnipeggers like to think that everybody knows what Portage and Main is, but you know what, they don't, like some do. But Portage and Main is like the big intersection in Winnipeg. It's a quote, I'm using air quotes right now, famous place. But there's no pedestrian crossing allowed at the intersection. They built this whole underground mall complex so that people have to go under, including people who have mobility issues are forced to go under because they don't want to tie up traffic. And they've actually built concrete barriers so that you'd have to hop it to cross the street. But anyways, they had
the opposite of what most places are doing.
Yeah, they had a referendum like 4 years ago to open it up, and the suburbs voted against opening it up, so it did not open up. And now it's going to cost like $10 million to fix the underground mall, and they're like, nope, we're opening it up. So,
okay.
Winnipeg. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Magical land.
Yep.
So dad comes in, picks up the shoes, and Chuck is kind of down in the mouth. And the dad says, cracks off a, why so glum, chum? I'm like, good job, buddy. He says, no reason. And he turns on the offer of a bowling alley burger. They're like, I'd go for a burger. Come on, dude.
Yeah, free burger? Fuck that. Give it to me.
Yeah. I don't care if I'm
sad.
Save
it for later. Your mom doesn't care about you.
Yes.
You can shove it in the hole in your pants. I don't know. Whatever. So he says he can't stay late. This is Chuck, not the dad. because he's got a lot of things to do after. So he's a busy kid, and the dad's like, yeah, life can be busy, I guess.
Life can come at you.
Chuck gives him the ticket, and the dad gets a kick out of it. He thinks it's really cool.
He says, go ahead. He says he told all the guys in the halfway house about it, and I thought, those people do not care. Like, so are you kidding me?
That's how you're breaking out.
I told everybody in jail. You're not coming back, right? Yeah, I told everybody in jail about my kid's play. I'm sure they're like, you interrupted me while I'm making this shiv. Like, can you go away, please?
Please take pictures.
Yeah. You got any smokes? Yeah, so. I'm going to my kid's play. Will you get smokes there? Can you bring them back? Like, come on.
I'm trying to watch All in the Family. Sit down. He's in the TV room telling all the boys.
You only get 1 hour a day.
He's going to be Robin Hood in the play.
Really? For real, mister?
It'd be more like, my kid's in Robin Hood. And do you three guesses on which role he is. Okay? Okay? Oh, come on. Here's a hint. He's in Robin Hood.
He's there for sure, which Chuck fires a sarcastic, wonderful... Dad catches on that the play is what's bothering him. His dad is attending. That's the thing that's bugging him. Chuck wants to shut down the conversation, but Dad persists, and Dad asks him if he's ashamed of him. And Chuck again says he doesn't want to talk about it. Like, leave it alone, dude. But anyways, Dad doesn't know what's going on with Chuck recently, but now he knows one thing. I ain't going nowhere. I'm not wanted. And then I stand up, I push my chair back from the table where I'm sitting, and I point at my laptop and I go, fuck this guy.
Oh, yes.
Oh my God.
I love it. He's like, why would you be ashamed of your dad in jail, son? Like,
yeah.
That's a bizarre thing for a child to feel. Like, I'm not saying it's right that. You know, like, maybe Chuck should be better with it, but it's like he's a kid. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah, you know what, Chuck?
Sad.
Yeah.
Fuck your brother. That'll teach him.
Yeah.
He went from like 0 to 60 in no time.
I could not believe it. Not only that, and then as he's leaving, he's like, you can tell Pete why I'm not coming.
and who's the adult?
Throws the ticket on the ground.
The one who did just rip it up in front of him.
Oh my God.
Chuck might as well look at the camera and said, he'll sleep good tonight.
Dad, eh?
He's hired himself out.
This has got to suck. Like, it's something that must suck about being a parent, right? Is that, like, you have your own shit going on, right? Like, his dad is probably dealing with a lot of shit. Like, he's dealing with, like, just having been in jail, probably having marital problems as a result, like, all of these things. And Chuck only sees him as a parent, right? And so, like, as a parent, that's got to be rough, right? Like, you have to be there for your kid while also dealing with all of this inner life that you have as a human. And kids can be horrible and cruel.
So what you're saying is Chuck's dad's really, reaction justified.
Really hurt. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying
in fact, not
that
enough.
Yeah.
I'm saying that as a parent, you have a responsibility to not react in that way to your child, even if you want to. Mm-hmm.
I love that he just went up and like left in a pout and just left his 11-year-old kid just alone in the bowling alley.
Yeah.
Like, you deal with it now. Figure it out, asshole.
And also, I don't have another child whose feelings I need to consider.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
It's only Chuck.
Well, maybe Chuck's really his only kid. Who knows?
I mean, this is further fueling my conspiracy theories about that family.
I got to go back to the house and watch scrambled porn with the boys. Is that a fucking tit? Sit down. We're back at stage practice, and Ida has a whistle because, of course, she does. I was like, yeah, perfect prop for her. They wrap up and she orders them back there at 5:30 sharp. Chuck is sweeping up and says goodbye to Tina and leaving him and Noel alone on the stage, just having a chat. And Chuck asks him if he's ever embarrassed by his dad and Gail, who we met back. We had a whole episode about the suit thing. And a little callback, Noel reminds him of the wedding shirt fiasco, which Chuck's like, that looked pretty good. Thanks, man. They go to walk off stage, and then instantly Noel's voice completely changes to another child's voice, which doesn't seem to freak out Chuck. And so Chuck and this new kid, supposedly, same body as Noel, he talks about his dad potentially coming to the play, and Chuck kind of told him not to come. Noel, or the new kid, maybe you could tell Tina not to come, and Chuck hopes he's joking. It's kind of funny, even though it was from a weird, a bad voiceover. This was the same voiceover I think we heard from the bedroom when Caitlin and Susie or Lisa or whatever her name was.
Oh, yeah, calling in. Go to bed. Yeah.
Go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. So same, I guess there's some consistency. So we're in the shower. All this places. Is,
what the fuck?
There's Chuck's quite a few shower scenes in these episodes.
Yeah.
Chuck's getting a wash. And Pete comes in hassling him to get out to hurry up. Chuck says he tried to give the dad the ticket, and they argue a bit, and Chuck finally has enough and says that he's a dumb con.
Okay.
And also, he's like, stop looking at me. I got, like, my kid dick and balls.
Yeah, like, I'm, okay, I never had siblings.
Eyes are up here, Pete.
I never had siblings, so maybe I don't understand the situation. But, like, Chuck's in the shower with the curtain drawn. Pete doesn't just come in and, like, shout at him with the curtain between them. He peeks around the curtain to talk to him. Like, yeah. Fuck off.
No, this would happen. I had a brother.
Yeah, this is pretty common. Ugh. Siblings, I think.
Yeah.
Thank God I had no siblings. People are like, oh, are you glad, you know, are you sad you're only a child? Fuck no.
My brother and I used to have the habit of getting cold water and throwing it over the top of the shower into each other if it was taking too long.
I'd fucking rather have that than someone like, hey, dinner's ready, and by the way, that's your dick I'm looking at.
Yeah, no, there's not a large expectation of privacy when you have siblings.
No.
So Pete states that he loves his dad, and he's your dad, too. So, like, you're there standing with your, like, with nothing on, and Pete is lecturing you. It's like, what the hell? What fresh hell is this? Leave me alone, Pete. You menace. So we're out of the shower, and we're somewhere else. We're in the audience setting up chairs. Ida, Tina, and Noel are setting up the chairs. Noel
those
is sporting
uncomfortable chairs.
Oh, yeah,
nice. I can remember those chairs.
Oh, yeah.
Screen back thing.
Noel's sporting a sweet Property of the Dallas Cowboys shirt.
Sure is.
Yes.
And Noel is wondering if they have seen Chuck. The curtain goes up in an hour.
Not sure the play's hinging on Chuck.
I was going to say, Chuck doesn't really, like, what, is he going to need to paint another tree while the fucking play is on? Like,
hey, there's no small parts, only small actors, and he is an integral part of the background crew for this play.
That's
you
what
know
you...
who says that? The people playing the main characters and the director.
Yeah, that's what you say to appease the jerk-offs in the cast. So...
The technical people are very important. Mm.
That's like what I say to the kids that are my 12th and 13th man on the basketball team.
Okay, all right.
You want to name them?
They know who they are.
Name the first name and last name. So Chuck goes to the halfway house looking for his dad. And by the way, they do thank the John Howard Society, which has halfway houses. They thank them in the credits. So this is actually shot. As far as I know, in a real halfway house, which was kind of interesting, kind of cool.
The receptionist is not credited, however, so...
Oh.
Do not know who that is.
They can't give out a real name.
No.
Mrs. Howard.
Yes, Mrs. John Howard.
Mrs. Joanna Howard. Because when you marry somebody, you have to change your first name to and put an A on the last thing.
That's exactly how it works.
Yep. Chuck takes the crumpled up ticket out of his pocket. Dad comes downstairs and fires off a very mature, "I didn't think I'd be seeing you around here so soon."
Yes, like, still pouting.
Chuck, yeah, go down. Back upstairs. Pouting.
"I told all the guys you misinvited me. They're all mad at you too.
I told all the guys I only have one son now."
I love, and then Chuck hands, he's like, "Here's the crumpled up ticket that you threw at me when you left the bowling alley in anger."
I'm missing Dallas for this. Chuck apologizes. Okay, so Chuck apologizes because he hurt his feelings.
Yes.
You hurt the adult's feelings.
We're not to the other side of the river yet, though. Dad says it was more what you, brackets the child, didn't say that got me. Chuck says, "I know." Like, he's like 4 foot shorter than the dad. I was like, he should have just patted his dad on the back or the head if he could have. Go there, there. Chuck says he wants him to come to the play tonight. He wasn't thinking about things that really count. So, like, Chuck is learning this big lesson. The dad learns nothing. The dad is happy to hear that, but now he's not sure he can make it tonight because he needed the okay from the boss from the previous night to get out tonight. So Chuck has made amends.
I love the whole point. Like, I think, because, of course, all of us immediately see his dad's behavior and we're like, what a fucking baby, right?
But oh, yeah.
But the writers, when they put this together, want you to, like, I'm assuming their intention is we're all supposed to be like, Chuck was really shitty to his dad. Like, poor Chuck's dad. We're all supposed to feel bad for Chuck's dad. Let's not all forget that Chuck's dad's in prison because he beat the fuck out of a bunch of people. Like, they just make him to be, like, the nicest guy in the world. And then it's like, oh, now it might be too late for me to get out of jail to see a play. And it's like, you're in fucking jail, dude. Like,
yeah. I think the lens that Degrassi is shot through, mm-hmm. that gritty lens, and think American History X the first, like, 15 minutes and go, oh, put your mouth on the curb, eh? Come on, get down there. Get down there, open wide, okay? All right, here we go.
Fuck.
So, Dad is going to try to track down someone who can give him a pass. The dad says, even if he can't make it, he's sure glad that Chuck asked.
Aw.
Sha-la-la-la.
Fuck Pete, though.
Yeah.
Sit, Rebusa.
Pete is not even part of this equation.
Pete doesn't even know that any of this happened. Pete's just, like, at the play, freaking out because his dad's not going to be there. And, like, oh, well.
Yeah.
Pete, you were not even a consideration in your father's mind.
Nope.
Show must go on.
Congratulations. Yep.
Pete looks just like the guy who runs the cab stand, like like the Danny DeVito character on Taxi. Like, he's a Pete is a mini version of him. So they're going on in 2 minutes. They're backstage. Chuck and Pete are backstage wondering if their dad is coming. Pete is sure he will because, you know, just he's hope for
Pete.
It. But yeah. He really don't give a shit. Positions everyone. Music teacher bangs with the intro on the piano.
Literally, I think, with open hands, just hitting.
Going keys. Hard. Love it. Fucking Jerry Lee Lewis there.
Yeah.
She's standing with, like, one foot on the stool, the other foot on the ground. That's like, right. Yeah.
Rock me, baby. Wah, wah, wah.
Robin Hood. So.
Oh, feels good. Robbing people, giving to the poor. Oh, yeah. Somebody's got to do that. Do a Robin Hood mashup with Jerry Lee Lewis. Yeah. No, and he does the whole thing. No, don't do that. That's the stupidest idea. So we have curtains open to start
Let's talk
the play.
About this play.
Oh, yeah.
So Noel and Chuck can't see if he's there in the audience. Because the audience is dark. I'll just pause there. Does anybody want to give an update on this play? Because I don't really have many notes on this play. Because I'm like, I was kind of grateful to get this episode because I'm like, I am not talking about this play.
Did you get up from your saying. Did you get up from your television for 20 seconds?
Yeah. Did you cough?
Because that's the entire play. Like it's not like they shoot this and you see like the progression of time over the, you know, like, oh, we fade out and then come to the scene later or blah 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 blah. They literally go from the start to the finish of this play. It's like a minute long. There are two scenes.
We can glean a little bit of information from the end credits of this episode because the children who are in the play are actually credited as their characters in the play. So Lisa is playing Little John. Tracy, beautifully, who we're meeting for the first time, is Maid Marian, of course. Martin is Alan Adale. Billy is Friar Tuck. Yeah, and apparently Maid Marian sends them on some kind of quest with a silver arrow, it seems, and then they have to defeat the Sheriff of Nottingham.
They're like,
to
scene one.
Obtain the silver arrow.
Scene one.
And then they
do. We have to defeat the Sheriff of Nottingham. Away we go. Scene two. He has been defeated. Credits.
Here's your arrow.
Yeah, they bow. That's the play.
Yeah.
One act play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sheriff of Nottingham died on the way back to Sherwood. So we see the dad entering, and he takes a seat next to the mom, who seems fairly happy to see him. Which I don't know why I thought like they'd be like, but they're actually getting along, which is good. So he's just kind of away on vacation.
I mean, even if your partner's like a pain in the ass, you still love them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone in mind that you're thinking, Arlo? Jeez. You're like, even if your partner's a pain in the ass, who wears his shoes in the house, Drew?
I wasn't
talking about anyone specific. I was talking about this family where the dad is in jail.
Uh-huh. And he should go to jail for wearing fucking shoes in the house, Drew. Yeah.
It's a law.
Well, like, leading up to him getting there, like, you can see that the mom is, like, a little bit on edge as well, hey? Like, you can kind of tell from her body language that she's, like, anticipating his arrival. And it's sort of, like,
she's put
shifting.
On her good blouse for the night.
She's going to have to go home and fucking deal with Pete. If he doesn't show up, it's like, fuck, like, come on. The one night where I might be able to get to relax and this fucking kid's going to be freaking out.
So, yeah, like, I get the feeling that he's maybe not, you know, hasn't been the most reliable partner. You know,
he can't be there.
Besides being in jail, but maybe
besides,
you know,
that,
the most reliable guy.
Oh, that thing, the jail thing. Like,
yeah. But what can you do? You love who you love. I don't know.
So there's a bit of a fuss backstage, but then they clamber onto the stage, and all's fine. And play ends with applause. kids bow on stage. Chuck calls Tina over to meet his dad. So, and we hit the credits. They're rolling. She says, he's a pilot, right?
Uh-huh.
And then it's blurred out, and there's voiceover that I couldn't really make out. So, like, it's not really resolved, which is fine. Like, I think it doesn't really need to be like, does he Chuck's been through enough this episode. He doesn't need to say, yeah, he went to Khan College. Like he's a jailbird. It's fine. Like he doesn't need to have this big Full House moment.
In theory, he goes over and tells her that this is my dad. He's in prison and Tina is never on the show again.
Yeah.
So either maybe she
went
she
home
disappeared.
And told her dad and her dad was like, nope. We're moving.
Or, you will not hang around with those ragamuffins.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, I'm sure Tina would be fine with it, but that dad, absolutely not.
There's no chance.
Yeah.
No. And, no, sorry, Bob.
Pete, not even part of the equation here.
Nope.
No, where's Pete, the star of the show? Hey, great job, Pete. You did so well. Nope. Chuck and Tina.
Pete, who I haven't seen the last two visits because he hasn't been showing up, and that's the whole reason I should be here. Nope, no Pete.
Chuck made his choice to take Tina and not Pete.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, the dad is rocking this aviator's jacket, like this rawhide, like with the sheepskin on the inside, sheep wool on the inside, and it's like, I kind of might be a pilot.
don't know. Was that a choice, I wonder? Like,
could be.
Like, it looks like a fighter jacket. I'm watching Masters of the Air recently. I'm like, same jacket. So, I don't know. Anyways, kids and parents mingle in the audience. And that's it. Like,
and we
no
end
Pete,
on, that on a happy note, except for Pete, who's crying in the back somewhere. It's like, we don't know.
No, he's busy signing autographs.
That's his episode. So, what do we think about this one?
That's fine. I mean, fucking dad is such a piece of shit, but otherwise, you know.
It was a big reveal.
Loved it.
We have an eye.
Because dad was such a piece of shit. Like, I just, you know, like, you just can't with this dad.
Yeah.
I do think that it kind of missed the mark, though. You know, like, it's so obvious that the dad is, like, a piece of shit and, like, poor, like, gaslit Chuck.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's, like, gaslit into apologizing and believing that it's all his fault. And I'm sure that the writers didn't intend it this way, of course. But, yeah. Chuck's got a tough life, man.
Yep.
Yeah. I was, like, my first reaction when he was starting to be a piece of shit, I was like, man, you deserve to be in jail. Get your ass back there. Like, you probably totally deserve this. This is justice. Like, go away.
The thing is, there are toxic parents out there. This guy probably does exist, but I don't think that was the intention of the episode.
No, right? When they wrote it, they were like, Chuck's a piece of shit. What an asshole. Like, that's what the writers thought when they put this together.
Well, I'm glad he redeemed himself.
Yes, he came back from it. Like, we don't want people hating Chuck for being worried about the presentation of his jailbird dad who pouts when he doesn't get invited to the fucking play.
It's like, not I'm surprised the dad didn't give one of those.
It's not even like Chuck lied. It's not like Chuck was like, there is no play, you know, Pete's sick. Like, he was literally like, I'm giving you a ticket to the play. I'm just not feeling enthusiastic because I feel weird because you're in prison, Dad.
And it's hard to be different than other kids.
And I'm a child, and that's just strange. Because I'm going to have to explain it to a girl who I have a crush on who has an asshole for a dad, too. But nope. Fucking Chuck. Hurt his dad's feelings. Worst.
I can only imagine the dad going to a job interview because he's trying to get more passes and get a job. And, you know, the interviewer like says, like, okay, so what are your best qualities? And he goes, well, I know what your worst quality is. Making me feel bad. And just walks out. So he seemed to miss his job as the adult in many of these situations.
Or when he's at a job interview and they're like, he's like, okay, so when do they start? And they're like, whoa, 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 like, we have to go through the interview process to see if you're qualified. And he's like, I'm not going to stay where I'm not wanted, and walks out.
But I did really enjoy it. I enjoyed almost everything about it, even though it's incredibly distressing for poor little Chuck.
Yes.
I've enjoyed every episode, and just for the future, enjoy the hell out of the next episode, too.
Well, what do we have coming up next time?
We got Hockey Night in Degrassi. It's great.
Hello out there. We're on the air.
You know us Canadians want to talk about hockey. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You'll join us next time.
Billy breaks the chain, and we're going to talk about chain letters. And no, not the internet chain letters that we used to get in the 90s when we started on the internet. Yeah, but real-life chain letters. So we'll talk about that. For those of you who are under the age of 30, you're like, the fuck are you talking about? It's going to be fun.
Exactly. Let's see who's around the board. So, possibly chain letter writer, geography extraordinaire again. Let's go over to Sask. Who's over in Sask?
This was Arlo. You can follow me on Instagram at ARLOESCOTT. Alan?
I'm Alan. The podcast is at Narbos and Broomheads Podcast on Instagram. That's a really long fucking handle. We are at Narbos Podcast on Twitter, narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Follow us on all the podcasting platforms. Give us a rating and a review if you really love us. If you don't, just forget that the internet exists. That's not a place. Yeah. Not a place to tell people you're not a fan of them. Not the internet.
Move on.
Yeah. And I'm Slip with Five Eyes, or Slip on some of the social medias. Oh, and we have a Facebook page too. We're everywhere. Anyways, Tim.
And I'm at FollyT at Instagram. Teddy, take us home, buddy.
And I've been Ted, your special boy. I'm at Seywa3 on the Instagram machine. I'm trying to get over that moniker, which I was floated in another great podcast, Super Hits,
That's
featuring
great.
One Alan and Jamie, and they introduced, they bid me adieu by saying, "Your special boy, RFA." So it's been your special boy, Ted. I'm going to say, wow, three. Instagram machine, come see Linda and Sugar Tea Cat. So we'll see you cool cats, next time on the Narbos and Broomheads show. Oh.
Bye.
Bye.
Later.
See you later,
well,
baby.
I just said I'm going to get my love. I would never do my homework. I would stay up late and dream about Kylan. I would never get girls out of my house.
Maybe I would.
I would walk with them and get naked just to get caught my dreams. Everyone thinks I'm so good. I went crazy at the school.